the 21st to order and welcome everyone here today. I'm going to change a little bit of the agenda. The only thing will be Senate Bill 317 will not be heard this afternoon. It will be postponed to a later time. So other than that, we'll go right through the agenda and I will open the work session on Senate Bill 76. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 76, we heard once previously, and the measure allows any parent or legal guardian of a person under the age of 18 to request cancellation of driving privileges of that person. It further eliminates the signatory authority of an employer for the purpose of making a person under the age of 18 eligible for driving privileges. We did receive a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the original measure. I want to point out that you have the dash one amendments to the bill at your seat, and those amendments completely replace the original bill. It's restoring a lot of the original language. So the dash one amendments essentially continue the elimination of the signatory authority of an employer for the purpose of making a person eligible for driving privilege. So, in other words, it's just an employer cannot sign a minor's application for a driver's license. And then it's also providing that that driver's license application of someone under the age of 18 must be signed by the person's mother, father, or legal guardian. We're adding in a couple different places qualifying the term guardian to mean legal guardian, and that's the only thing that the dash one amendments then would do in replacing the entire original bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Robin Freeman, could I ask you to come forward? I have a question. I just want to clarify something with you. As you know, our company hires young, very young people to wash cars and be lot boys and so forth, and they drive cars around the lot, and we are sure that they have a driver's license. Does this amendment say that an employer such as ours could not sign and just have a young person driving automobiles around without the signature of the parent?
Madam Chair, yes, as currently drafted, as amended, you would no longer be able to give a child permission to drive. But you couldn't do that in current statute unless they didn't have a parent or a legal guardian anyway.
Okay. Any questions of Robin? All right. Thank you very much, Robin. All right. I'm going to entertain a move to accept the amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 76 to the committee.
Senator Whitsett moves that the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 76 be adopted. Is there any discussion? All right. Any objections? Not? So ordered. Senator Whitsett.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 76 as amended to the due pass recommendation.
Senator Whitsett moves Senate Bill 76 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this? All right. If not, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Senator Vester?
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Whitsett?
Aye.
Chair Berger?
Aye. All right. Senate Bill 76, having received the required number of votes, will go to the floor. We need a carrier. Senator Whitsett?
I can do that.
All right. Senator Whitsett will carry. All right. Next, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 868. Is signed
up. Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 868 provides for reductions in fines for excess vehicle weight if the person is able to produce an expired or a valid variance permit, and if the person has not been previously fined for excess vehicle weight because of a failure to renew the annual variance permit for the same vehicle. We have a no revenue impact on the measure. We're still waiting for word on fiscal on this one. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. I'll call Bob Russell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations. And thank you for allowing me to provide some testimony on this bill. Currently, trucks that operate over 80,000 pounds must obtain a permit from ODOT and local governments that authorizes operations at those weights. The purpose of the permits is for safety. It's to advise the truck driver of road conditions that are unsafe, impractical, or sometimes impossible for these particular trucks. The cost of the permits is $8 on the state highway system and range from $2.75 to $8 for local jurisdictions. The fees are designed to recover the cost of issuing the permits. Permits can be obtained from ODOT, most of the jurisdictions that issue them, and from third-party agents, including the Oregon Trucking Association. So the permits are valid for 1 year. Today, truck drivers that are unable to produce a valid permit are cited for operating in excess of their authorized weight. So, for example, if a truck is operating lawfully at 105,500 pounds, but they don't have a permit, the fine is 24 cents a pound for every pound over 80,000 pounds, or $6,120. This level of fine for failure to obtain an $8 permit seems to be disproportionate to the offense. Senate Bill 868 would require a court to reduce the fine in these instances if a truck driver first produces a valid permit showing that it was the weights that they were operating were lawful, to $100. This option would only be available to a truck driver once. The second time, they would consider to be educated, and the full penalty, subject to the discretion of the court, would be imposed. Currently, trucks that are subject to fines under Schedule 2 have a very similar provision where the court is required to reduce the penalty to $100 if they produce a valid permit showing that what they were doing was lawful. And trucks that are fined under Schedule 3, which means that they're operating overweight on a posted bridge or a posted highway, and there are signs that indicate that they're prohibited, they would continue to be subject to the full fine. You know, the regulations regarding trucking can be very complex, and each state has its own unique requirements. And sometimes it's very possible for a truck driver to unintentionally fail to comply with some of these requirements. For example, we had a situation not long ago where a truck driver went into ODOT's Portland Bridge office and said that he wanted to increase his weight from 80,000 pounds to 98,000 pounds. And the clerk issued him the necessary paperwork to increase the weight for weight mile tax purposes, for registration fee purposes, but they failed to issue the $8 permit. The truck proceeded down to Woodburn to the scales and got a ticket for several thousand dollars, and certainly it was no fault of the truck driver. The fine was eventually reduced substantially, but it took a lot of time on the part of the truck driver, the time that he could have been making money, in order to get it done. And I guarantee you he was very impressed with the importance of getting the permit in Oregon. Certainly it's very important that truck drivers obtain these permits, and I do not believe that this bill will reduce compliance in any way, because once a truck driver sees that ticket for several thousand dollars, they are certainly impressed with the seriousness of the offense, even though the court can one time reduce it to $100. So what we're really doing is providing a reasonable penalty for an unintentional first-time offender. truck drivers that are operating illegally or overweight are going to continue to be subject to the full amount of the fine. Now, I understand that Brad Swank, I talked to him just before the hearing, he's got a couple technical issues with the bill that I would be happy to address if the committee desires to do that.
All right. Can you give me a little bit about who he is? Is he from Portland?
He's on your list. He's with the courts.
Oh, okay. All right. What I would like to ask you is give me an example of why a truck driver wouldn't pay $8 and get a permit.
And the only reason that they wouldn't is if they didn't know for some reason that they needed one, or sometimes their permits expire, they're not aware of it. Other times they have a valid permit, and most truck drivers carry a permit book, and it's got all the permits for the states that they operate in. In Oregon, there are several pieces of paper that have to be in that book, and every state is the same way. Sometimes what happens, quite frankly, is that they have a valid permit, they show the enforcement officer an expired permit, and they get a ticket. So there's a variety of situations. And it's basically inadvertence. It's sort of a clerical error that leads to these situations. And it's just that the penalty is excessive in consideration of the violation.
And the penalty is for first time only.
And this, the reduction in penalty would be for the first time only, yes, ma'am.
All right. Other questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I've got to ask him, Bob. I mean, this to me seems like we're setting up basically ignorance is a defense for this class of individuals, and if that's the case, shouldn't we do that for others, such as someone that didn't wear the seatbelt? They came from a state where they don't require that, but in our state we do, and it's a $94 ticket.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, if you look at the second page of the bill, starting with lines 23, there's virtually an identical provision in current law that applies to fines that are assessed under Schedule 2. All I'm really doing is expanding that to Schedule 1. Although the new language is more restrictive than the existing language, because the new language makes it clear that there's only a one-time reduction. Any future reductions that are subject to the full penalty.
Okay. Other comments? Anybody? Okay. All right, I'll get you to step back, and then I'll call Brad Sorrent. Oh. We also have a letter from the City of Portland. Is there anyone here to speak to that? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Chair Verger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank, Special Counsel for Government Relations for the Oregon Judicial Department. We were asked to do a fiscal on this bill, and as we were looking through the issues on the fiscal, I ran across a couple of technicalities that I thought I would mention to you if you want to progress with this bill to make sure that it achieves the intent you want. And we actually did call the sponsor's office to let him know about these concerns. They told us that they would call us back if they had any concerns about our raising these concerns, but I know you're all busy. We hadn't heard from him, so I'm assuming that he's all right with them. The first one that I'll mention is on page 2, line 5. It says, if a fine imposed under subsection 2 or 3 of this section is more than $100, the court shall reduce the fine to not more than $100. Okay. The first issue about that is that in order to impose a fine, you have to have a judgment. You get a judgment after a proceeding. The way this reads, you make the person come in twice, once for the proceeding and once after the proceeding, to get the fine reduced. We think it would probably be simple and more straightforward and less convoluted for government if it were offered as an affirmative offense during the proceeding, so that that judge could just not impose a fine of more than $100 to begin with. And that's just a common sense sort of thing. The second issue is with the same language, and an interesting thing about this language is it says that the court shall reduce the fine in line 6, and you'll see that. And the legislature has passed a provision that creates minimum fines for traffic offenses. And let me read the first sentence of the of ORS 153093, which is a statute that relates to these fines. It says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, a court or violations bureau may not defer, waive, suspend, or otherwise reduce the fine for a violation to amount that is less than, and then for these kinds of fines it sets an amount of 20% of the base fine amount that the officer writes on the ticket. So what you do, if unless you say notwithstanding ORS 153093, you create a situation where you've got two statutes that conflict on their face with each other. And while there's a legal way to sort of get around that, you may end up with judges who go to the language notwithstanding any other provision of law and say, well, I can't reduce this because I've got this other statute that says notwithstanding any other provision of law. So all I'm suggesting is that a technical thing, if you want this to the new language to be an exception to ORS 153093, that you specifically mention that in the statute, so judges, when they look at it, can tell that you're intending that this be a specific exception. Those are the only two technical suggestions I've had. We've taken no position on the substance of the bill. I can answer any questions if you'd like.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Surratt? All right. Thank you very much. I believe, would you come back, you're willing to work with him on the technicalities and get that straight on the bill. Have you had an opportunity to see the opposing letter from the City of Portland?
Madam Chairman, I have. It was dropped in my box late Friday afternoon.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be sure that you saw this. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do, give you a chance to work out those few little technicalities with the bill.
Okay.
I will close the public hearing.
Great.
Today on Senate Bill 868. All right. In case you weren't here, I am postponing Senate Bill 317, so we will move now to a public hearing. I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 558. Who is here to speak? All right. Well, we have a nice long line of people. Called first, Roger Martin.
I'm sure I'm not.
How many people, please?
And before I go any further, I need to have Judith tell us about the bill anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member, Senate Bill 558 requires the election of members of boards of directors of particular mass transit districts situated in areas with populations of fewer than 400,000. We have received no revenue impact on the measure, no fiscal statement yet on Senate Bill 558. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. I believe that this is Senator Morissette's bill, and I don't see anyone here. Judith, would you call and see if he or Don Bishop will be coming? We'll just stand at ease for a few minutes until we get the proponent of the bill.
I see you here.
I'll ask you both to come up. Welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you.
We are ready to have a public hearing on Senate Bill 558.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Morissette, representing Senate District 6, which includes parts of Lane and Linn County. The bill that you're about to hear has been around for a while. My predecessor, Senator Dwyer, introduced this bill earlier in the late 90s. I've introduced it in the past. And the purpose, the underlying purpose of the bill is the taxation without representation aspect of it. I think that There are probably two examples of taxation without representation in the United States, and one of them is TriMet and the other one is Lane Transit District. I think it's unprecedented that we still have bodies that are not elected that can levy taxes without direct accountability to those people who are being taxed. Now, this includes a property tax, it includes income tax, it includes a business license fee, it includes a payroll tax. There are others that they could levy as well. So that's the main point of the bill. I don't have a complaint about the individuals who are serving or who have served. I think that they represent a broad range, spectrum of the community. They are appointed by the governor, obviously, and they represent, I know we have the disabled community is represented, the low-income community is represented by Susan Bain, who works for a nonprofit. At times, though, like any other public agency, you have to question the decision-making. You have to question their budgeting, their allocation of resources, their customer service, their responsiveness to the people that they serve. And in every instance, other than this particular board, people have an opportunity to vote on people who they who represent them. They can vote them into office, they can vote them out of office, they can deal with them directly. There is no recall, there is no election. They're insulated and isolated from the public if they choose to be. And I think on principle it's bad, and that's why I have brought this bill forward one more time. Now, LTD is in an expansion mode, quite expensive. The ridership per mile is fairly high. The funding comes from a number of sources, including federal funds and state funding for state based on state employee payroll tax. And there are questions that have been raised in terms of the judgment of the board in various instances. And again, it's like any other, some of us have served in local government and the city councils and so on, and we hear from our people who elect us, and we go back to them and ask them to re-elect us at times, or somebody can run against us based on our bad judgment, according to them. This doesn't happen on the LTD board. So I think it's time that we change the system and allow elected representatives to that body. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Morissette. Representative Fulby.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Committee. Senator Morissette basically summed up what I went through great pains to write, and I'll submit this, and rather than just reread what he said, I just am in total agreement with him on this issue.
Madam Chair,
yeah.
I think we need to have the identification for the...
Representative,
all right, so that we all know who you are and the record.
Representative
that.
Paul Holvey, District 8, out of Lane County. Thank you. But I will just add that, the recent events down in Lane County with the labor dispute and the work stoppage, brought into question some of the decision-making policies. And the question was, is whether these policies were benefiting or addressing the community needs. And as we all know, public policy decisions can be questioned, but public policy decisions should be subject to redress by the public at the ballot box and accountable to the community. And I think that's the gist of this bill, is that we're using public dollars, and we believe the public interests are at stake. Obviously, the transit district serves the whole community, and currently the governor appoints this board of directors, and the names of the nominees are submitted from a small group that are non-representative of the community. though, as Senator Morissette pointed out, there seems to be a good cross-section on the board. It's just very important that that board remain accountable to the community. If the community decides that they're not serving the needs, they should be able to replace the board at an election. And I'll go ahead and turn in my written testimony to that effect.
All right. Thank you very much. I have a question, Senator Morissette. Do you feel that the community at large, a wide number of people are disturbed about this or unhappy with it, or do you feel that it's just those that maybe deal with the transit district?
Well, when I guess in the late 90s, when Senator Dwyer presented this bill and I was the mayor of Springfield, I heard mostly from business people in the community because they were the ones who were paying the tax, basically a business tax, and there was a lot of, at that time, dissatisfaction. I still hear from some business people. I've heard from writers. Okay. The arguments for and against an elected board when it comes to deciding basically ridership issues, if you have districts and if a person is appointed, they're removed somewhat from complaints from their constituents who live in the district. If you are an elected member from that district, you're going to pay a lot more attention to them because you have to run again, and so there could be greater pressure put. And I hear, and I'll give you the other side of the argument that you may hear anyway, is that then the process becomes more political. It's one district against another district against another. I have not found that to be true. Actually, in the city of Eugene, where they elect people by district, there seems to be a fairly workable group of people coming together. In Springfield, they're elected by district, but they're elected citywide. I don't think that would be an argument for not having elected people from the district. All of us who are elected have to be answerable to our constituents, whether or not it's a district or a large city. And I know, I feel strongly that complaints are not taken as seriously as they would be if the person was elected from that district. They're appointed by the governor to represent that district. They can make decisions with impunity. I'm not saying that they do that, but they can. And the principle of the thing is that they should be elected. This is, I approach this as a matter of principle, taxation with representation instead of without representation.
Great question. Senator Whitsett recognized.
Chair Berger, Senator Morissette, are other than TriMet and LTD districts, do they have, are there districts other than those two, are they elected, are they appointed, are they a mixture around the state?
Well, the board members of the Salem Transit District are elected and not appointment, and my legislative assistant talked to Marcia Kelly, a longtime Salem board member, who thinks it's a good idea. She according to my, I didn't talk to her personally, but she feels that it works well in the Salem area to have an elected, she is an elected board member. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they do.
Actually, in Klamath, they're elected too, but I wondered if you knew kind of from around the rest of them around the state.
Well, the only other, okay, Lane Transit District and the TriMet District in the TriMet area are the only two appointed districts. They're the only two in the state of Oregon. All the others are elected.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then another question. I was wondering, are the transit employees represented on the LTD board?
No.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Other questions? Another question? All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I just interject one more item?
You certainly may.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I just might also point out that LTD also uses other taxes besides the payroll tax. That there are federal monies that go to LTD, which, you know, all of us taxpayers pay for. And there are also our in lieu of payroll tax subsidies from the state of Oregon, as well as special transportation fund through a tax on tobacco. So it's not exclusively employer taxes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you. I'll ask you to step back. And now I'll ask Roger Martin if he'd like to come.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association. This bill has been with us off and on over the past 20 years. I approach it gingerly because it is controversial. The Amalgamated Transit Union, who supports the bill, are people that we value and have worked with us for a long time on, I think, the bigger issues of how we support transit overall in the state of Oregon. And I also want to caution, my colleague sitting in the front row here had an experience a few years ago. She was testifying to a similar Senate committee very eloquently and vehemently about the evils of electing a board like this. And the chair of the committee out there says, do you have something against elected people? And she says, well, in this case, yes. She says, well, all of us up here, meaning you, we're elected. Don't you find that a contradiction? And she almost quit the whole lobbying industry over that.
That's a good story.
I would like to give you a little history of this. I was a member of the 1967, 69, and 71 legislatures when we addressed the issue of turning what were then private bus systems in municipal areas into public bus systems. And I chaired a committee in 1969-71, an interim committee on mass transit and urban affairs, and we addressed all these problems. The background of why we have two different statutes in Oregon law. One covers transportation districts, such as the one in Klamath Falls, the one in Sandy. We have about a dozen of them around the state in smaller areas, all of whom have elected boards of directors because they're all funded by a property tax, which is the entire public is pays. Transit districts were set up in the two large urban areas. Salem was a city government at the time and had their own city bus system. Transit districts were set up in the Eugene area, which became Lane Transit District, and TriMet in the Portland area. There were three key characters who were involved in this, all of whom are now deceased. Bill Roberts, a businessman in the Portland area who was the president of Lippman Wolves, which was at that time a rival of Myron Frank and a department store. Mel Schopert, longtime Amalgamated Transit Union representative and one of the key characters in putting transit together in the whole state. And Representative Bob Elliott, State Representative Robert A. Elliott, who I serve with in the legislature. And they got together trying to figure out how are we going to get enough money to fund the major systems. They were talking mainly about TriMet at the time, but it also applied to Lane Transit. And they came up with a much larger number of taxes that were going to be available to choose from. And Bill Roberts and Schopert both agreed at the time, and Bob Elliott, the one we ought to go after is a payroll tax. That's a tax on business payrolls. And there were very few public employer types. Some have been included since then, but this was directed right at the private business system. And they knew it would be very controversial, and it was tremendously controversial. There are lobbyists who have gone to heaven, or wherever lobbyists go when they leave this earth, ruining the day they ever let the payroll tax go through uncontested. And the trade-off for that was we're going to have appointed boards of directors so that the business community will be appointed. And I would respectfully disagree with my predecessors, the two legislators. This is not taxation without representation. This is representation of the people that are being taxed, which are the payroll payers of the state of Oregon. And that's why the systems were established with appointed boards boards. And historically, I would challenge anybody to go back through the history of the last 40 years and tell me that the people appointed by our various governors of both parties have not been outstanding representatives of both the business community and the general business community. And the boards of directors of Lane Transit and Triumvet have been outstanding. And those two systems are recognized nationwide as two of the finest public transit systems anywhere. A few years ago, Lane Transit received the Outstanding Small System Award in the nation. And it's because of those boards of directors that have been appointed. Let me just shift for a minute. What happens around the rest of the country? There are hundreds of transit properties all over this nation that are either transit districts, municipal, some form of public entity. Only three are elected. The metropolitan system in Denver, Colorado, the system in Oakland, California, and BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. Those are elected boards. And I would point out to you, you can go back and check history, two of those three, BART and Denver, have had serious ethic problems with those that got elected. So it's no guarantee you're going to get the best possible people by electing. In the 1990s, one of the BART directors was actually investigated by the FBI for alleged kickbacks on contracts. So it's not a salvation at all. And I would simply say the history of our systems in Oregon have been good people are running those systems. This bill usually comes up where there is some kind of labor negotiation going on with one of the entities, and there was a strike, as you all know, in Lane Transit. That was settled, thankfully, a week and a half ago. But I don't think the board of directors wasn't, you know, responsible one way or the other. It was the management that was dealing with the management of the union and that.
I just want to set the record straight. Since I'm one of the signers on this bill, I did not sign this bill because of a labor dispute that's ongoing.
So noted.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Senator Pruszynski, I did not mean to allude that. It usually has come up in the past in that instance. I would hope that you'd seriously look at what happens around the rest of the country and the history of what's happened here. I would simply point out the system is not broken and does not need to be fixed.
All right. Any questions? Senator Pruszynski.
Roger, did you know that also not just business people that are maybe carrying a large payroll, but also people that are self-employed also are taxed under the system?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, Senator Pruszynski, you're correct. In subsequent years, self-employed people, and that includes me, have been included in this. At one time, there were some specific exemptions for either real estate or some other kind of brokers. Those have been included. And there are some public entities that are now paying the payroll tax. And I'm sure I would just point out in that instance, the governor has been, I think, cognizant of that in the past. All of the governors that I've dealt with over the last six governors and appointed people that represent those kind of interests. And you're going to hear from some local people from Eugene who will be able to tell you about who's on the board now.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I'll get you to step back, and I'll call Doug Barber and Andy Barbora. Welcome to Transportation this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Berger, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Doug Barber here today on behalf of the Lane Transit District. As you've heard, this is not a new issue. A decade ago, the legislature considered a very similar measure. And I'd like to read just a couple of lines from an editorial that appeared in the Eugene Register-Guard about this issue back in 1995. The headline of the editorial read, "Leave LTD Board Alone." The copy of the editorial went on to say, and I quote, "While elected boards have surface appeal, they are inappropriate for transit districts. Their," meaning the board's, "appointment allows them to stay above the political fray. set district policy, and hire able professionals to conduct the day-to-day operations of the district. There is no need to politicize a system that works. There is no need to force expensive campaigns for board positions when the evidence supporting such a change simply does not exist. As the editorial said, that's the end of the quote. As the editorial said, appointed boards can stay above the political fray. That is one of the reasons why nationally only 3% of the transit boards are elected. Appointed transit boards are the norm. You heard Senator Morissette talk about the taxing authority of the board. In fact, the state legislature has the taxing authority for Lane Transit District and for TriMet. The legislature sets the tax rate and determines who will pay the tax. Now, the board administers that tax, and the board can decide not to collect all of the tax that the legislature has authorized. In fact, last session, the legislature raised the tax rate for LTD and TriMet, and LTD's board decided not to collect the increased tax this year. It's working with the Chamber of Commerce, the businesses that pay the tax, to determine when the tax will increase to what the legislature has authorized. As others have said, and I'll repeat, I think this is a mantra you'll probably continue to hear, there is no problem that this measure fixes. The key issues for LTD are the same today as they were 10 years ago. Like every transit district, LTD works hard to improve service, to increase ridership, and to better meet the needs of our community, and this proposal does nothing to help on any of those fronts. LTD is a very, very successful system. By any number of measures, LTD is one of the leading transit districts in the country. And with me today is Andy Vibora, who is the Director of Marketing at Lane Transit District, and he's here to share with you some of the performance measures that compare LTD with other districts.
Thanks, Doug. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Andy Vibora. I'm currently the Director of Marketing. I've been with the district almost 22 years, also as Guest Services Manager and Manager of Service Planning and Marketing, so I've had somewhat of a history with the district. I'd like to just share with you a couple of key points around what's been talked about in terms of how LTD has been recognized nationally as one of the best districts around. And that would start with safety awards and recognition on key performance indicators. LTD has participated in studies of transit districts of equal size on a number of occasions, has always finished in the top 10% of those. The handout that I gave you has some of these key operating statistics of the peer groups that we're often compared to. And what you'll see there is that, and I'm not going to take a lot of time to go through the detail, but you'll see highlighted in yellow at the bottom of the page some of those statistics that show that LTD is performing very well. These are peer group systems of equal size, and the district year in and year out compares well with these districts. So I'd be happy to answer specific questions if you have those around that. But LTD has also been recognized for its safety in recognition of the quality people that drive our buses, that work on our buses, and that's come through time and again. I'd also like to recognize the financial management of the district. Year in and year out, the financial management of the district is checked. Every 3 years we go through the FTA's triennial audit. LTD always performs well there. Annually, we go through an independent audit, and the district has just received its eighth award in a row for quality and excellence in financial management. So we're very proud of that at the district. We're proud that the people who work at the district take using the public's resources very seriously. I'd also like to recognize the partnerships that have been built over the past 35 years the district has been in operation. This includes partnerships with the cities and the counties and the state in terms of projects, including partnerships in terms of projects that are in our regional transportation plan, work with employers to develop programs to help get their employees to work with our educational institutions, the college at Lane and the University of Oregon, where we've had a long relationship, a very successful relationship, and have won awards for the ridership programs that have been established there. And with other groups in the community, LTD was the first in the nation to become fully accessible for people in mobility devices. We're We're very proud of that. We run one of the premier dial-a-ride services in the nation, one that's looked to time and again as a resource. We really believe that it's because of the structure of the district, the quality people we have, the quality volunteers on our board of directors who allow us to take a community-wide perspective that we've been this successful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? All right. Thank you for testifying today. All right. I'm going to drop down and pick up someone that has a different position. Jim Markey.
Madam Chair,
Jonathan Hunt and Carol Ulrich. All right, very good. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim Markey on behalf of the Amalgamated Transit Union Division 757. I'm celebrating my 30th year of representing the Amalgamated Transit Union, and I have seen this issue before, and some of you have seen the issue before too. It's a difficult issue in some ways because it does become somewhat divisive, I guess. I want to clarify a couple of things that were said by previous witnesses and set the record straight on a couple of things. This bill was not introduced at the request of the Amalgamated Transit Union. We are here today to testify in favor of the bill, as we have in past sessions when the bill was up. But I did not talk to Senator Morissette before he introduced the bill about this bill. I didn't ask him to introduce it. He did so on his own, and I believe that he asked other folks to sign on the bill on his own without input from the union. And Senator Morissette further was not involved in any way in the labor dispute in Lane County because he wanted to keep this issue separate because he doesn't feel it's part of that issue. And certainly I respect that decision on his part, and I just want to make sure that everybody does understand that he did this on his own. A couple of things that were said relative to the appointment process, that people, I believe Mr. Martin said that people who are appointed represent the very people who pay the payroll tax. Well, there's simply no statutory requirement that that be the case. People are appointed that the governor appoints, period. So they may or may not represent people who pay the payroll tax, and I think that's an important thing to note. And with respect to who sets the taxes that are paid by the folks in the transit district, while it is true there is statutory authority for a tax and that the statute sets out a maximum that may be charged, it's clearly within the purview of the transit district how much the tax is and how they tax it. So I want to clarify those things, and then I want to talk about the process. It was said that I think the Eugene Register Guard was quoted as today as saying, don't politicize this process by moving to an elected board. If anybody on this committee doesn't think appointed boards are political, you would only have to look to the events of the last couple of weeks with respect to the forestry board, I think, to know that they can be political. When it comes to these boards, the real question is, what's the best process to get a board? What's the best process to get the best qualified people for the board? And the way we do it with an appointed board is we go out to the community and we try to find somebody that we can get on the board. And we've experienced some recent labor disputes, and the unions probably feels pretty strongly about this right now because they're not very happy with the board, and you're going to hear from a couple of members here today. But the truth of the matter is that
if they didn't have friends on the board, it was because management did a better job of finding somebody and getting the governor to appoint them. And that's how we do it. We go out and we try to find, oh, would you serve on the board because you'll be my friend? And then we get the governor to appoint them, and then we get you guys to confirm them. And usually the confirmation on these things doesn't rise to a very high level because there aren't a lot of people in the building that care. Is that the best process? That's the question, because that's the real process. Is that the best process, or is the best process to find people in the community that are willing to take the time to go through an elective process and get elected and actually be beholden to the people that elected them, not somebody else? That's the question for you to answer, and you have to answer that. I can't answer that for you. But in my mind, that's the question. I believe an elected board is more responsive to the citizens that elected them, and it's that simple. Now, I have with me John Hunt, who's the vice president of Amalgamated Transit Union, and Carol Allred, who is our executive board officer from Eugene. And for those of you who don't know, the Amalgamated Transit Union represents the workers in all of the transit districts across the state: TriMet, Lane County, Salem, Medford, some folks in Tillamook, and we represent some other folks outside the transit area as well. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and if not, I believe Mr. Hunt would like to.
I think I'll have everyone to speak, and then
that'd be fine.
Any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jonathan Hunt, Vice President, Assistant Business Agent for Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 757. There's been a number of problems with the lack of accountability of Lane Transit District's appointed board. The LTD board listens only to management. They are not independent and take no independent responsibility for running the district. We repeatedly were told by passengers and business owners, that the LTD board never listens or responds to their concerns. They have not taken responsibility in the following areas. Despite vigorous opposition from passengers and businesses, they have cut service 24% in the last 4 years in their budget upon management's recommendation. Some passengers have experienced 3 cuts in their services alone. They absolutely refuse to do anything other than back management in labor disputes, refusing to consider, investigate, or do anything other than what management wants. A community committee was formed of representatives from business, passengers, disability, community, churches, education, law, and workers. The LTD board stonewalled this committee so blatantly that it was reported in the press. It also stonewalled the committee's report, although later events provided that the committee had been accurate in their analysis. If the board members had engaged respectfully, dialogue with the committee, LTD passengers would not have been without service for a week. During the first strike in LTD history, we learned that a number of the board members were not available. When concerned citizens, including local legislators, tried to broach the topic of the threatened strike, the board members frequently responded that the general manager has assured us that the workers will not strike, so they weren't worried. Throughout the negotiations, the management bargaining team said their hands were tied by the board's vote of an artificially low increase for the bargaining unit. The board's response to the community committee was that they were leaving the whole thing in the hands of the management bargaining team. So neither the board nor management were accepting responsibility. No one from the board even bothered to get involved in the labor dispute until Mayor Piercy stated that she and her committee would be attending the mediation sessions. Our passengers overwhelmingly supported the bus drivers in the labor dispute. Much of the reasons for the support was that many of them also found that LTD's board completely unresponsive to the concerns about service cuts. Passengers are the ones who coined the phrase, the bobblehead board. No elected board would tolerate a gag order like the ones put on the workers at LTD. There are elected boards in Medford and Salem, and in general, they have demonstrated that they are more responsive to the input from citizens when the input is contrary to management's position. Public transit is a central public service. The week of lost service was completely unnecessary because the facts prove that LTD's board uncritical acceptance of the dire cutback in workers' income and rights had no basis in financial need. They believed what management told them and refused to look further. Just a little independence and critical thinking would have avoided this entire dispute. LTD is now tarnished with a reputation which will impact its ability to provide transit service in the future. All of the disputes could have been avoided had the board felt they were accountable to someone other than management. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carol, give us your name and where you reside.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Carol Allred. I reside actually outside of Eugene. I'm executive board officer for ATU 757.
Can you back a little bit? It won't give you.
Okay. And I'm also a bus operator, as is my husband. So both of us do the same thing. And both love our jobs, by the way. I'd actually like to address a couple of things that were said. One by Senator Morissette that LTD is in expansion mode, and I think that's a great thing for the most part, but it's gotten to be where the expansion mode has for several years been at the expense of our passengers, and now lately, through the labor dispute, it has also been at the expense of the employees and the entire community. Riders and business owners have been in opposition of many of the expenditures that have happened, and I'm told repeatedly when I try to tell them how to speak up for themselves to the board of the directors through the district that they don't listen. And I feel that if the board was elected, they would be more inclined to listen than they have been in the past. We were, and I would like to think still are, one of the best transit districts of its size in this nation. That slipped some over the last few years. That's unfortunate. Morale is not what it should be there. But I'd like to respond to what one gentleman said, and that was that the implication that it's because of the board of directors that we received high ratings, and it's also due to the outstanding employees that we have in the bargaining unit who are out there on the front line every day, and the board of directors isn't. I have to tell you, I was appalled during negotiations, and this is a little bit off the track, but you need to know the board of directors, when we were out on strike, was not available when we reached a tentative agreement. We were told we were going to have to wait 4 more days for them to vote on it. I, for one, objected to that strenuously, and I cannot help but think if they knew that they weren't going to get our votes or someone else's vote, because I'm going to tell everybody this in the future, that they might have made themselves available when they knew the mayor had stepped in, and also Mr. Jack Robertson. We'll be eternally grateful for their intervention, but the board fell down on the job. And I can't help but think if they were elected, they might have been slightly more available than what they were. That's all I have. Thank you for listening.
All right. I want to thank all of you for your witnessing today. Are there any questions before they leave? All right. I'll get you stand back, and I'm going to go back up now and call Terry Connolly and Jack Roberts. Good afternoon. Welcome to our committee hearing today.
Thank you. Chair Berger and committee members, my name is Terry Connolly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for providing this opportunity to speak on Senate Bill 558. The Eugene Chamber of Commerce is comprised of 1,200 member businesses in Eugene and, in fact, throughout the Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area. Our mission is to promote a healthy local economy, and in that capacity, we recognize the important link between transportation infrastructure, transportation services, including public transit, and their connection to our growing the local economy, creating jobs and future economic development opportunities. With that as a backdrop, I'm here today on behalf of the Chamber to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 558. We do not think the change in lane transit district structure of governments is a good idea at this time, especially barring any major change in how the agency is funded. And to date, we're not aware of any compelling reason for changing to an elected board is necessary. We're not aware of any problem with LTD structure of governments that needs to be fixed. When you consider that Lane Transit District is funded by a business payroll tax, if there was some compelling need to change their structure of government, it would most likely be businesses who would be leading the effort to do that, and they would likely be looking upon the Chamber as a representative of them to be leading that cause. Right now, that simply is not the case. Granted, nobody enjoys paying taxes, and admittedly, the payroll tax is not always popular amongst businesses. However, that is not what Senate Bill 558 is about. This bill is about changing the structure of LTD's governance, but with no guarantee or no proof that doing so will produce a better transit agency, no guarantee or no proof that it will produce better transit service to current or future riders, and most importantly, no guarantee or proof that those who pay the payroll tax will see better administration of those dollars in the policy and management decisions of Lane Transit District. The process of having the governor appoint and Senate confirm members of the Lane Transit Board is a sound process, and our community has been well served by that, and in particular the businesses and individual employers who pay that. We simply do not see a need for a change in governance structure at this time, and we respectfully ask the members of this committee not to approve Senate Bill 558. Chair Berger and committee members, thank you again for this opportunity to comment. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Welcome. I have to say that one of my most delightful days was spent with Commissioner Roberts, who was at that time the Labor Commissioner, tooling him around my community and showing off some of the things that we're doing in Coos Bay. And it's delightful to see you today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I enjoyed that as well. And I know you're doing a great job here, but I'm sure they miss you as mayor in Coos Bay. For the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I am the executive director of the Lane Metro Partnership, which is a private nonprofit economic development agency that was formed 20 years ago this year by the cities of Eugene and Springfield, Lane County, and by the Eugene and Springfield Chambers of Commerce. As Mr. Connolly pointed out, the link between transit and economic development is an important one that I didn't fully appreciate until I took this job. I have, however, been familiar with LTD and have worked with them in other capacities before as a county commissioner and even as labor commissioner. This bill, as has been mentioned before, has been before you off and on for the last 10 years. I think I've been here to testify against it just about every time. I would like to add just a few things to what's been said. First of all, I think the comment about this being a matter of principle of taxation without representation and the rest of it is a good academic debate, but if it was really about principle, it would apply to all transit districts in the state and wouldn't carve out TriMet for one treatment and LTD for another. This issue has primarily been about LTD, and the testimony you've heard here about some of the problems between labor and management is a very real problem, and one that I became particularly familiar with about a week and a half ago when I was part of the community mediation team, including our mayor and former state representative Kitty Piercy and our Johnson local attorney, as well as some others who helped us work through that. I want to say a couple things about the LTD board and the role that it plays. First of all, I've also, over the years, had the privilege and the challenge of trying to convince people to apply to serve on that board. As with a lot of unpaid boards and commissions, it is a tremendous commitment of time and a commitment to the community. And I've often wondered how many of the people that I have been able to persuade to put their name in would have been willing to engage in a campaign to be elected in a community of our size, or, in the case of TriMet, even larger. you all know what a commitment that is. And a lot of the people who are willing to roll up their sleeves and work to try to help a transit district run and do its job are not people who are interested in or necessarily have the aptitude for running for office. In addition, one of the things that I believe that this governor and previous governors have tried to do is to make sure that the board does not simply reflect the payroll taxpayers, but represents a broader constituency. And I believe that you heard Senator Moore make reference to that. He referred to a gentleman, Dave Klieger, who has been a strong advocate for disabilities, people with disabilities, and he has been involved on the LTD for a number of years as a private citizen and on advisory committees to help us get to the point where LTD is, I believe, the only transit district in the country where all of its buses are handicapped accessible. And he's on the board. Susan Banning, as you mentioned, is someone who's involved in private nonprofits and has been involved in a lot of parts of the community that are reliant very heavily on the use of transit. Mike Eister, who is the Assistant Vice President for Student Affairs and Director of University Housing at the University of Oregon, another important constituency group, is also on this board. These are people who might not be elected if everyone were chosen by the voters at large. I think the voters do a good job of making decisions in a majoritarian fashion where the largest public interest is represented, and that's important in things like city council and county commissioner and state legislature. But in groups where you have a lot of smaller stakeholders, I don't know that the electoral system gives you the pluralistic board that you need to have to make these decisions. I think LTD does have that. And in that regard, I want to make some comments about the recent labor disruption, because I said I had something to do with that, and I learned a lot more about that than I frankly ever wanted to know, and feel a little bit uncomfortable now being on the other side of two new friends of mine, Jonathan Hunt and Carol Allred, who did a superb job of helping get that resolved. But I think a lot of people don't understand that the decision of the EWEB board not to get involved in the strike early on was not something that was unique to an unelected board. We had the same thing happen to us years ago when our school district had a strike, and the school district refused for the longest time. The board would not get involved and left that to management. And finally, when the chair of the school board got involved, helped get that resolved. I remembered that, however, because when we were asked to be a part of this, one of the things that I insisted on, was able to get, was the participation of the chair of the board as part of the bargaining team for the first time. And when we met a week ago on Thursday at 9 o'clock in the morning, our chair showed up and participated until 2 a.m. the next morning in the negotiations that got us to a conceptual agreement. Then the next day, as we continued to labor through and get the negotiations through, we did reach an impasse. And yes, there was a concern at one point that the board would not be able to meet until Monday. But at the urging of some members of our team, the board did meet Saturday morning and had this explained to them in a way that made them see that it was in the best interest of all concerned to get this resolved. They gave the green light to their bargaining team, and that night we reached a solution. So I don't believe that it's fair to say that the board was removed from the process. The board was simply following, I think, what has been a traditional, if sometimes misguided, policy of trying to separate the board from these decisions. In the end, they bridged that gap. They got this done. The bottom line, in my view, is that LTD is well run. The labor management problems that exist, and they are real, can be resolved in the context of what we have. I think it's important that we look at this in the same context as you do TriMet, as an important operation on the public sector for which the governor and the Senate have exercised their responsibilities appropriately to put people on there who can solve these problems. There is no alternative but for us all to work together to make it work. Changing the rules of the game, I don't believe, would help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for either of these gentlemen? Senator Prasansky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to start off with a comment. Jack, I want to thank you for what you did and your participation. I understand you used the noodles to actually get a lot of the stuff out on the table, so thank you. I know it really meant a lot to the community to have you, Kitty, Art Johnson, and the others there willing to put in the time. I guess I want to ask you, I look to see who else is on the list. We have no one from the board here. We have no one here from what I consider upper management. I understand Andy's here as marketing, but and all due respect, I don't think he's in the position to be able to answer this question. So I'm going to ask you, can we get outside the box? Can we look at something that might be something different, such as maybe having four of the seven appointed by the governor, three at large being elected? to give some type of perspective where people feel they have maybe a say, because I know at least how this process works and getting someone appointed. I get noticed because I was a representative or I'm a senator, and they say, hey, we have this opening coming. Do you know anybody you want to suggest? And I don't know if that really works for the masses that are out there to be able to have an opportunity to be a participant. And I also would say that as an individual who is self-employed, who does pay the tax, I welcome that. But I've had a number of my constituents who are in the same position who wonder, where in the hell did they get off taxing me? That's what they tell me. I say, well, the reality is everyone benefits by having a great transit system, etc. But there are people who are paying the tax who are upset with the current system, and they don't feel they have a way of engaging in who are the leaders and making those decisions. So back to the question, in your discussions, knowing that you can't go into the privy of what was behind closed doors, but can we get outside the box instead of either or, maybe there's some type of combination?
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, first I want to make it clear, I'm not here representing the board or anyone else. I'm here, and as I have been in the past, representing my perspective on this. I think it's in your power to craft any solution or compromise that you want to. And frankly, I think the idea of having some people elected might have some appeal. What I don't know has been figured out is what is the cost of having those elections for those positions? How does that work? And how does that really address the broader problem of trying to make sure that you have representation by districts, which I believe is required currently by law and that would be required by this bill, and then have those people also serve these other constituencies? The appointment power gives more broadly that discretion to the governor to be able to do that. And as I say, I think this governor and other governors have done that pretty well. So I wouldn't say that what you're talking about is not reasonable or can't be considered. I think what might be a better use of everyone's time is to talk to the governor, express the concerns you have about the representation. On the issue about the self-employed people, that was what really triggered this several years ago when the state law has always allowed that, but for a long time LTD did not impose it and decided it's really not fair that because one attorney, let's take that example, is incorporated and has a PC and therefore pays a salary, and others are self-employed, one will pay the tax, another won't. They said, and in fact there are people on the board at the time who voted to do that who are also self-employed and who were paying that tax for the same reason that you said you support it, because they support the system. That's sort of a one-time issue, and once if they get elected board or they do that and they're still paying the tax, I don't know if that is an ongoing interest, and they're going to continue to be engaged in the electoral process. That's one of the concerns I have about an elected board, is that this is such a narrow issue that from time to time it may flare up and be involved in controversy, but the rest of the time there's not going to be the kind of engagement in the public and the feedback. And these smaller constituency groups like seniors, students, people with disabilities, that their voice may get lost in the electoral process. So I think there's a good argument on both sides, but I certainly wouldn't say that what you're suggesting is out of reason.
Other questions?
I don't know if Terry wants to respond.
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, to your issue about the, I guess it comes down to perhaps access to the board, and just in my workings with the Lane Transit District, I mean, I see them not unlike an elected body, and that, you know, for their board meetings, or that their boards are accessible to for public input, to raise public concern. The chamber, I mean, we don't always agree with their LTD's policies, but they're certainly accessible, just as any other agency is. And again, we just don't see the need to change that at this point in time.
Any other question? Well, before you leave, I just want to express to you, but also to the people who are here today, I wonder sometimes how much people know about the Metro Partnership. I've always been totally jealous with our North Bend Coos Bay situation that we've had over the last 35 years. I always thought, well, that would be easy. We can just form a Metro Partnership, just like they did in Eugene and Springfield, and we can do just exactly what they've done. We'll solve all their problems. And it just wasn't that easy. And I didn't know about your involvement in the labor situation, but I'm not surprised. And when we were trying to put together the South Coast Development Council, which is an economic development group, we visited the Metro Partnership, because I've always held that up as the structure that we should all kind of follow behind. So it was very, very good to have both of you to witness today. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Our last presenters are David Hinckley and Joseph Hubble, both from Lane County. That's not Hinckley, that's Hinckley, isn't it?
Which one? I'm Hinckley.
You are Hinckley? All right, then I read it correct. Good.
Tells me I need to work on my handwriting.
I do like to pronounce people's names correctly. I'm called so many funny things. So, all right, welcome again.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Hinckley. I am a resident of Eugene, Oregon, and an infrequent user of Lane Transit District's bus service. I am not a member of organized labor, though I am a community activist involved in transportation issues, and I will be deviating from my prepared remarks. A little over 231 years ago, to cries of no taxation without representation, a group of Boston citizens threw chests of tea into a harbor, starting off a sequence of events that got us to our nation that we've got it today, where we are today. Today I'm here to comment in favor of a piece of legislation that would pass would end another case of taxation without representation. For no matter how carefully a governor may select the members of the Lane Transit Board, they are still his appointees, and they are not representatives of the people. An observation. Given what happened with the last strike, not only is this a case of taxation without representation, but this is a case of taxation without providing services. The board continued to collect taxes during the week of the strike and didn't make any effort to provide any service. Given the response of the LTD board to community requests responding to the pending strike, it is clear that they're not representative. A group of citizens on the eve of the strike asked both parties, union and management, to wait an additional 35 days so that they could investigate the change to claims that both sides were making and go forward and see if there was a solution. The union agreed. Management implemented the new agreement. The good news is the union stayed and didn't strike for the 35 days. Unfortunately, nothing could have came out of it, and we had a strike. But that is not the first time that LTD board has turned a deaf ear to appeals from the public. They do so every time their service reductions come up. 24% reduction in service, it's not clear whether they're trying to run a business or transit system. If they were trying to run a transit system, then they provide the service so the public could get where they were going. If they're providing a business, they should have shut down years ago because they can't operate on the toll box, fare box revenue. It's clear that their reaction to the goals are not the public they serve. Yes, electing the board would move LTD into the realm of the political. So, American government's political. And as far as important services, for well on decades, the city of Eugene's water and electric has been run by an elected board, EWEB. And while I've had disagreements with the board, at least you can reach them. And they pay attention to the fact that in a number of years they're going to be reelected. The other thing about it is the public pays this tax. First of all, everybody that rides on it pays through the fare box. Secondly, the self-employed pay the tax directly, and as far as those, the rest of it, of the public, so I happen to be self-employed, they pay through reduced compensation. Anybody that doesn't believe that an employer figures up all of his costs when he's figuring out how to compensate somebody, and that the taxes that he pays on his payroll don't affect how he pays his public, needs to look again at how business is operated. While SB 558 would make LTD responsive to the public, I have a couple of changes that I'd like to recommend that would improve the bill. The first one is move the election of the board members to even-numbered years made primary the November election cycle. That's the one where people, the voters expect to elect people. Hiding the election off on off election times invites it disappearing. There's interest during election cycle. Secondly, add language that makes it clear that with the vote, with the bill going into effect, that at that point the members of the board would be subject to recall. I'm not advocating recalling them. I just would like them to be subject to it. It's an interim step. At that point, those that wish to stay on might listen to the public. They might not, but it's an interim step. Three, make it an emergency clause so that this goes into effect when it's signed by the governor. This should have been done back when this thing was set up. Why it was set up without an elected, I'm a little bit lost on. I mean, I understand that there's some question about taxation, that employers wanted more representation than the public, but my feeling is if we're going to change it, let's not wait. Add language that would have interim, have the seats filled, vacant seats filled by the Lane County Commission rather than the governor up until such time as the board is fully elected. My recommendation on this is Lane County Commission has roughly the same area as LTD, and they're familiar with the public, and the public can reach them, and they're responsive. Once the board's fully elected, I think it should replace itself for the interim, for partial terms, like most boards do. And add language that would have the current board stand for election at the next possible special election. Again, I don't see any reason not to get this thing rolling as fast as possible. I'd adjust the seats such that the odd-numbered terms are up for the next, would be have their terms set up so that they'd be subject to re-election in 2006 and the even-numbered in 2008. And lastly, in regards to Senator Przanski's comment of going outside the box, it's not the best solution, but it's moving in the right direction, assuming that it's four elected and three appointed. Thank you.
Thank you, David, for taking time to come to Salem today and to offer your testimony. I think spirited debate is always good in the public policy arena. All right. Give us your name and where you reside.
Madam Chair and Committee, getting that aside, that's what I was taught to do, a quick tutorial on how to do things here. Jack is still here. I want to publicly thank Jack for getting involved. My name is Joseph Hubble. I'm an LTD bus operator, so very personal. Thank you. I'm not as prepared as some. First, I want to talk about the glorious history of LTD, and it has had. It's been one of the best services in the nation time and time again for its size. I've been with LTD for close to 7 years, and I enjoyed their service before I was an operator as well. During the last 4 years, however, there has been a downturn in that service. And certainly we have now the one strike tarnished reputation. Over the last 4 years, as my union representative said, there is a 24% cut in service. I know that the administration would say, no, it isn't 24%. However, when you look at who it has affected, you'll see why we say 24%. The cuts that they have made, they'll tell you, has been in low ridership areas. However, some of those low ridership areas are areas of low socioeconomic people, and those cuts hurt those people the most. The goal that I've heard said is that we're going to try to get upscale people so that they transfer those cuts from the low socioeconomic area to some of the professionals. But those cuts are real for the other people. You asked a question earlier about whether the dissatisfaction was widespread, whether it was just the ridership or not. And I live in the community, and I talk to people all the time. I've lived there since 1972. I know a lot of people. I used to own a business. I run into people all the time I know, and I talk to all of them. And I was also on the strike line and saw the response from the public as they drove by. And the percentage that, from my perception, was very high in terms of their dissatisfaction for the way things have been run. All the writers who talk to me talk about those cuts, talk about the changes. So the question to ask is, how do you address the inequities of a misguided management and a rubber stamp board? Right now, I believe that's all we have is a rubber stamp board. All the information that they gathered before the strike was gathered from management. They did not seek outside information whatsoever. The first meeting that they had with the outside the citizens committee to try to prevent this from happening, their total reaction was, we cannot discuss the negotiations, and all the financial records are on the web. And they repeated that mantra over and over again. And even though we were discouraged from seeing board members, I did go out and seek out a board member to talk to. And after almost 15 minutes on the phone, he said he'd meet me. And I ran over to his office because he said he was leaving in 1 hour. And so I changed and whipped over there in 5 minutes. I met with him. And I'll say that he listened. He listened to me. But there was no... The response that I got from him was pretty clear that he thought that all the information that he was getting from the management staff was all that was relevant. And now, Jack said that Mike Eister is a board member, and he represents. Let's see, he is the assistant. What is it? Assistant. He works for the residence halls. He helps with that, and he manages like 250 people or something. And so supposedly he represents the university. But I got to say, from my perspective, he represents management. That's what he does. That's where he's at. That's where his head is at. He doesn't represent those people. It was very hard to get a hold of him and talk to him, and his response was one of, I have all the information. It seems to me that the board of directors acts as a governor, a rudder for Lane Transit District. But if all they do is follow the recommendations of management without questioning or thinking outside of the box. Then they're not representing everybody. Mr. Vibora spoke of the excellence of LTD, as I did, and it has been excellent. He spoke of the safety record. That speaks to the professional drivers that we have.
That's true. That's very true. Most of the time, safety records are very much dependent on employees of any kind of business, not just Lane Transit. I'm going to get you to wrap up for me right now.
Okay. The manager came on board 4 years ago, and since then there's been a steady decline in service and morale there. The safety record, the professional drivers have, for the last 3.5 years, the morale has been extremely low. He came in with high hopes, team, LTD, and all that, but it's gone steadily downhill. And one of the proofs that the board isn't connected to us, as well as the community, is that they gave him an excellent evaluation. Even though if they just would have walked down the hall and talked to us, they would have gotten a very different picture.
Well, David, let me just say this, and we're going to have to close, but this bill requires that the board of directors be elected. Now, all of the other things would take place if you believe that an elected board is going to be better. Then that means that this bill is going to make things better. But many of the things that you're discussing, such as labor and management relations and so forth, might not be covered in this bill. You understand that?
Well, I understand that. And once again, how do you address the problem as a citizen or a driver if you don't have a board that's willing to listen to you, that only listens to management?
All right. Well, I'm going to thank you both for testifying and ask you to step back and.
Thank you.
It's been a good discussion, very good discussion, and I think sometimes we don't have enough discussions that are spirited and two sides of a good debate. There are a lot of things. One thing that I know about the Lane Transit District is that when my young people were over going to the university, they certainly used it a lot, and they certainly enjoyed it. And we were very glad that they had it to move them around. So that's one thing I do know about it. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 558. And if there's no other questions to come before this body, I'm going to call the committee adjourned.